This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Tuesday, September 12, 2023. I'm Caleb Brown. States and localities are moving ahead with further restrictions on access to nicotine-based products. Jacob Greer is author of The New Prohibition, The Dangerous Politics of Tobacco Control. We spoke last month in Chicago about the harms those nicotine restrictions and some outright bans on sales can bring.
I quit smoking 10 years ago this month.
Oh, congratulations.
Not coincidentally, started vaping 10 years ago this month, but I have not had a cigarette in 10 years, and I am happy about that, and I'm going to keep that streak going.
That's fantastic.
And I encourage all of you young people out there, the legions of Cato Daily Podcast listeners under the age of 30, don't smoke. It's bad for you. However, what's worse than smoking is tobacco prohibition, and there are a number of states, high-level state officials who really just do not understand the dangers of prohibition and are perfectly willing to dispatch police forces to enforce prohibition. So where have we seen sort of the biggest pushes so recently in the efforts to perhaps once and for all, as far as they're concerned, get smoking effectively out of society?
So the biggest action we're seeing right now is at state and local levels. And most of the focus right now is on banning flavored products. And a lot of the time that is focused on flavored e-cigarettes. Sometimes it's comprehensive in terms of all flavored products, including the big one being menthol cigarettes, also oral tobaccos of various kinds. And we're seeing this, I believe, five different states have implemented at least some kind of flavor ban across the board. Also, many, many cities and localities, including where I live, which is Multnomah County, where Portland, Oregon is. And the one that has done this the first and the longest is Massachusetts, which passed a comprehensive ban on all forms of flavored tobacco across the board, including e-cigarettes, in 2019.
Okay. And how has that gone?
It went about as well as I would expect, which is to say that it has created illicit markets and a very rapid and thorough substitution to people bringing in products from across state lines, since Massachusetts is a relatively small state and is very close to New Hampshire, which is where they're getting a lot of their tobacco now. So we saw tax revenues based on tobacco fall by about 20% immediately following implementation of the ban, and correspondingly go up in neighboring states. So it's really not too hard to figure out what was going on there, that these goods were crossing borders.
And then the people who are moving the goods across the borders are assuming some criminal liability for doing so because they're not paying the taxes.
Exactly. And that's the point that that most progressives who advocate for these policies tend to miss, because they talk about how the flavor ban itself does not have criminal penalties. And that's true. The flavor ban on its own is not going to send anyone to prison, but the laws that are already in effect are the state tax laws. And when people bring in these products from other states, they're violating the state tax laws, which are felonies, which in Massachusetts, that includes prison sentences of up to 5 years. So despite what people say when they say there's no risk of police enforcement or criminal penalties for violating these flavor bans, they don't take account of how it interacts with existing tax laws, which exist pretty much everywhere.
And we've also seen what the governor of New York has said, that she's interested in pursuing a ban on tobacco products.
Yes. They have a ban on flavored e-cigarettes already. They want to go to menthol cigarettes. And I believe they've also talked, I don't know if this was Eric Adams, the mayor of New York, mentioned the possibility of just a complete ban across the board.
Tell me what's going on in your home state.
So I live in Portland, Oregon, which by many standards would be considered perhaps the most liberal drug jurisdiction in the world, certainly in the United States.
Oregon itself.
Oregon, yes, and in many ways led by Portland in that regard. But we were one of the first states to legalize recreational cannabis. We have decriminalized possession of nearly all drugs in the state of Oregon. We have just now begun implementing legalized psychedelic therapy. We've legalized cocktails to go. Pretty much any drug you can name, we are one of the more liberal jurisdictions in the world.
However,
there's always a but. And the big but in Oregon is nicotine. Multnomah County, which is where I live in Portland, passed a flavor ban recently across the board, banning all types of flavored tobacco products. which is very much in tension with the general support for harm reduction that drugs get in the state of Oregon. Like, you look at opiates, there's a recognition that, you know, people are going to use them, and so we need to make them as safe as possible. They don't get the same attitude toward nicotine, which is bizarre because it is, as we know, an incredibly deadly product in the form of cigarettes.
And addictive.
And addictive. But it is not seen as something where harm reduction, for some reason, it just doesn't get the same respect as a harm reduction approach.
So flavor bans, when you say the word flavor bans, people know what that means in the context of tobacco products, where you have the, what I like to call analog tobacco in the paper that you then smoke. And the flavor ban, I get what that means. So when they apply the flavor bans to, say, vape products that are nicotine, liquid nicotine that is delivered, that you inhale just like you would a cigarette, doesn't contain a lot of the tar and the other chemicals that are in cigarettes. But the flavor ban applies to those. Typically they gloss over the distinction between actual tobacco and nicotine vape products. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's true. And because, if you think about it, a nicotine vape product by itself would essentially be flavorless. So when they say that they're banning flavors, what they basically mean is we're banning all flavors except for flavors that are modeled on tobacco. So which is very weird if you're considering that one of your goals with e-cigarettes is to help smokers quit. You know, what a lot of smokers will say is the last thing they want is a vape that reminds them of a cigarette. And that's
right.
Yeah. And
give me Fruit Loops or creme brulee or something like that. But please, I don't want it to taste like a cigarette.
Right. And you're talking to people who don't follow this. They all say, like, well, these flavors are clearly out there targeting children. Why else would they make these? And, you know, I think if you talk to adult vapers, and this is borne out by surveys, the vast majority of adult vapers also prefer non-tobacco flavors. So there's no way to separate those two issues.
So more generally, though, it seems that the war on tobacco is, as you have said, a war on nicotine. Cigarettes are bad for you. It's probably true that vaping is dramatically less bad for you. But the public health establishment generally does not view those two items as fundamentally different.
Correct. Like it is a war on nicotine at this point, sort of an ideological stance that nicotine itself is bad and that no one should use it. And that so there is a tension there between, you know, wanting, you do you, are you trying to eliminate the harms of using combusted tobacco, or are you trying to eliminate nicotine use regardless of its level of harm? And most people in tobacco control, with thankfully there are a lot of exceptions, but most people in tobacco control are looking to eliminate nicotine entirely. And you see this with the way these laws are written, because, you know, part of the concern with e-cigarettes was always youth use. But you see these laws also incorporate things like nicotine pouches that are, you know, consumed like an oral tobacco. They contain no tobacco. They're one of the safest forms of nicotine consumption that you could possibly imagine. They are basically ignored by teenagers. There's very, very little youth use. Like, the main use of these products is adult smokers trying to quit. And they're just getting thrown into these bans as well.
Just because there's a possibility that young people might be enticed to engage with these products.
Yeah, if they even think about it that far. I think it's also just a general disregard for the interest of smokers and nicotine users.
To the extent that disconnect persists between drugs broadly, especially in Oregon, and nicotine specifically, especially in Oregon and, you know, left-leaning states, why does that persist? What is it? Is it an ideological commitment? Because there's quite a bit of evidence that nicotine itself is not that harmful.
Yeah, there's just a subjective perception around certain drugs. So, like, if you look at, you know, the past century plus, say, coming from the late 1800s, you know, there's a pretty firm separation where caffeine, alcohol, and nicotine were viewed as almost as not drugs. Like, they were just legitimate products that adults consume. And everything else was illegal drugs, even if it wasn't technically legal at the time, but they were drugs. And we've definitely seen a shift over the past 20 years where nicotine has been increasingly delegitimized and cannabis in particular has been increasingly legitimized as a lifestyle choice. And so, like, especially in Oregon, you know, we can walk into a legal cannabis store and find fruit flavored candy, cannabis gummies of every kind, flavored vape products, flavored cannabis sodas. Like, there's no tension here whatsoever. But the idea of a flavored nicotine product is anathema. And it makes no sense. And I have, like, seen advocates for our flavor bans in cocktail bars drinking, you know, they don't drink warm vodka. They want a flavored cocktail.
So do you suspect that there will have to be some sort of reckoning with a nicotine prohibition? Because, you know, nicotine is a highly addictive. People who genuinely want to quit smoking cigarettes have a very hard time doing it often. And will we have to actually deal with police killing somebody like Eric Garner, whose only crime was selling loose cigarettes on the street? Are we going to have more events like that before these states stop and say, okay, maybe we went a little too far that one?
Well, I certainly hope it won't come to a case like that. But what we will see is that states like Massachusetts, where these laws have been in effect for a few years now, I think those are going to provide a model for other states. And if we look at the Massachusetts case, we can actually see arrests have begun happening. There are multiple criminal arrests and prosecutions in process in the state of Massachusetts right now. In part because of the pandemic, and also just in part because criminal justice system takes a long time generally to work through cases, they haven't come to a conclusion yet, but we are coming up. I think pretty soon we will see the first people being sentenced to prison for violating these flavor bans, technically violating the tax law by selling flavored products, but either way, the outcome is the same. And so then I think people will have to look at that. And unfortunately, we probably will see this happen through the criminal justice system because there really isn't anyone advocating on behalf of nicotine users. You know, the anti-smoking public health groups are really more like anti-tobacco company groups than pro-consumer groups who are actually looking out for the interest of people who use nicotine. So it'll be very hard to lobby for these laws effectively until we have pretty clear demonstrations of what the unintended consequences are.
Jacob Greer is author of The New Prohibition, The Dangerous Politics of Tobacco Control. We spoke last month in Chicago. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast wherever you please, and thank you for listening.